Welcome to the Audible Ecstasy Podcast. Each week we sit around and discuss the music from our past. Sometimes we agree.
I call it iconic. It's a 10. That riff is it's incredible.
Clearly a 10. This is one of the most iconic songs of the 80s.
Iconic from start to finish.
And sometimes we disagree.
The song sounds like something you might hear at your aunt's funeral.
The absolute worst lyrics ever.
With the juvenile flush on that one, I'm not dealing with that. I'm not dealing with that crap.
Thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
All right, we are back with another Audible Ecstasy podcast. And this week, boys, we get to take a trip down Eric Clapton's highway. It's my pick, 1989's Journeyman. You guys ready to do this?
I'm absolutely ready. How about you, Anthony? You ready for this?
I don't have a tagline, but let's try this one.
Tagline.
It's the Audible Ecstasy podcast. We ain't pretending with this stuff.
There you go. That's pretty good. Yeah,
I like it. There is nothing that lends itself to a tagline in this album. I'm sorry. You know, we're three old dudes. We give nothing but bad love. How's that? Is that better?
Yeah. For sure. Yeah.
You may have hard times, but at least you've got the Audible Ecstasy podcast.
See? That's mine. I told him about that one.
He told me about that.
Sorry.
All right, boys. Well, let's get this party started. Start off with track number one. Pretending. Hit it. You just recall. Working on the sound of the band. Trying to get the music right. To go out when three stay home at night. That's when she said she was. So this album is going to start off with a bang. Pretending, first single from the record from back, I guess it was released in November of 89 from what I could find. I mean, this thing absolutely is just got a nice drive to it. I mean, the guitar riff is infectious. His vocals, absolutely on fire. I think it's super powerful. I mean, it absolutely sets a tone for the majority of this album. We got a couple of poopy pants in here, but for the most part, this thing will absolutely, I mean, it starts out on fire. I mean, this is blues rock at its finest, I think. I believe with Eric Clapton, this one, different from his 70s stuff by a long shot, but this is still iconic in my ears, and I think it's perfection for him, especially for the 80s. Disregard the tone on this album because it's going to get sticky and nasty with that 80s tone, but man, this is perfection. I gave it a 10. Chris, what do you think about Pretending?
Yeah, this is easily the biggest hit on this album, I would imagine. You know, it's blues rock, but it's also kind of mainstream in a way too. It was a very radio friendly song.
Oh yeah.
Got a really catchy chorus, smooth vocals, got a great groove to it as far as that goes. Excellent way to start the album. I also gave it a 10. I think it's pretty much perfection for this guy.
All right, Anthony, what do you think about Pretending?
Songfacts.com says in this song, Eric Clapton is at the end of his rope. And one of those relationships that only survives through mental deception, with the couple pretending they're right for each other. Around this time, he was going through a divorce with Patty Boyd, the woman who inspired his song, Layla. Mm-hmm. They say Clapton based his vocal delivery on Leon Russell, if you can believe that, an American blues musician he admired. You can hear this most clearly in the first line when Eric sings, how many times, and it's got like the times, kind of like T-I-I-M, so I guess he drags the drags it out, so what they're saying. Must we tell the tale, emulating Russell's distinctive drawl. Russell and Clapton go back a ways. They co-wrote the song Blues Power, which appears on Clapton's 1970 debut solo album. So that's song facts. So it sounds like he was going through a nasty divorce at this time and just tired of living the lie, I guess. So, Be Percy, man, it's a great lead-in song. Eric sounds fantastic. Guitars, drums, it all works. Song sticks in your head the more you hear it. I was actually searching this one out yesterday to hear it again. I just keep getting stuck in my head all week. I really dig it, man. Yeah, it's a 30 for us. It's a 10. It's perfection. This is easy 10 for me on this album, man. I mean, I heard this one with a kiss. It's a 10. So,
now, which wife was he divorcing at the time?
It said the one he, Patty Boyd is what it said.
Do you know who that is? Do you know who she's famous for being married for outside of Eric Clapton?
I don't know.
George Harrison of Beatle fame. He stole her from George Harrison. And him and George Harrison were best friends.
There's a George Harrison song on here. Was that?
Yeah. Well, him and George Harrison were best friends. And it's pretty funny. It's crazy how that story went, man. But yeah.
And he's okay with George Harrison stealing his wife from him?
No, he stole George Harrison's wife.
Oh, and they're still friends?
They were until the day he died.
Probably did. Oh, were they? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Until the day George Harrison
maybe George had had enough. Was like, thanks for taking her off my hands.
Well, apparently back in the 60s when they all hung out and partied or whatever, they were very, very close-knit. And and George was not maybe a loving husband, according to some of the stuff I read in Eric Clapton's biography.
I got
and it led to him writing the song Layla about her. And Layla was a monster hit back then.
It was.
And I think George Harrison was knew about it at that time. So
yeah. Well, that's interesting.
And of course EC marries her and sure enough. It's just one of those crazy rock and roll stories.
It's back in the day when they would just drop a key in a bowl and open the door and everybody walk inside, right?
Yeah, it's hard to tell what the hell's going on in those houses, but you know.
Before you move on, there's something that happens in music every so often that happened to me on this song. you know, you'll hear a lyric and you think you're like, that is, you know, but it's not at all what that actually is. There's a part in that song that I swear to God, for my whole life, I thought he said, everybody knows Tone Loc ain't real, but he's saying something about love or something. And then I actually looked it up this week when I was listening to it. I'm like, what's he got against Tone Loc, man? I mean, the guy's just like, you know the part I'm talking about? It sounds just like that's what he's saying. I don't know.
That's
weird.
Funny as heck. Oh my God. All right. Let's go to track number two. It's called Anything for Your Love. Hit it. Absolutely into a gear shift down. Anything for Your Love is absolutely a pop song. It has polished production, but it's pure 80s. You can hear the tonality through and through. His guitar work is still present, just not as prominent. Song is absolutely radio friendly. I think it certainly shows where Eric was focusing on becoming absolutely completely mainstream after the success he had on the previous couple albums. So that happening would lead me to believe that he was taking advice from somebody else producing this record. And obviously it was a single as well. I got nothing against it. I think it's very good, and that's where I stand. I gave this one a 6. Chris, what'd you think about Anything for Your Love?
Yeah, it definitely has that 80s synth Casio keyboard sound. I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't just like hit a button to start that and
probably.
And just start playing guitar. But that said, I actually kind of enjoyed the song once you get past that, and it, you hear it playing, and then all of a sudden it just like it kind of fades in the background, and the vocals come through and the guitars come through, and you know what, it grew on me. At first I thought I was gonna bash the hell out of this song, I'm not gonna lie. When the first listen, I was like, hey, this is crap, but then I started crap. Like listening, and the chorus is very powerful and effective, and there's a really good guitar solo in there too that he throws down near the end of this thing. So I went 7.5 on it. It's better. It grew on me quite a bit, and if we wouldn't have had like 3 weeks to listen to this, it probably wouldn't be that high, but last listen was like, this is a pretty solid tune, honestly. So
very good, man. Yeah. Very cool. All right, Anthony, what'd you think about Anything for Your Love?
Yeah, and I'm going up a notch from Chris on this one. I'm digging it, man. It's got a vibe to it that I really enjoy. It's got a groove that you can kind of just get into and jam. It's just, you kind of just sit and jam to it, you know?
Very
it's
groove one of those driven, kind of, I agree, man.
Yeah. Eric sounds great on vocals. Guitar is smooth and on point. I like this one, man. I found myself singing along to it, too, off and on. I gave it an 8. I think it's an excellent tune. So, and I do like a little dabble of synth in the background. I think that's kind of cool, man. A little keyboard stuff. I like that. Okay. Get a little 80s vibe to it.
A Christmas morning Casio sound there you got going on.
All for it, man. Play better than I could.
All you got to do is hit a button, dude. It's number 3, I think, that one was.
Okay, cool. God. I remember that.
All right. Let's go to track number 3. It's called Bad Love. Hit it. So Bad Love, I think this is an absolute standout song as well. I mean, for my scoring, coming up from Pretending to Anything for Your Love, this is Bad Love is right back on track to where it started. Blistering. I mean, it's a blues rock tune at its finest core. I love that use of the wah pedal with this opening. I mean, absolutely incredible. His vocals, I mean, you can definitely feel the emotion he's singing through on this, like he's lived through some kind of divorce, if you know what I mean. His guitar solo, fantastic. It's perfectly driven in the blues tone that you love from Eric Clapton. The lyrics, of course, very standoutish. You know what he's going at. This is Eric Clapton yet again, right up at the top of his game. I think it's somewhere between outstanding and perfection. I gave this one a 9.5. It's probably a little high compared to you guys, but it's a killer tune, man. Absolutely love this one. Chris, what do you think about Bad Love?
I didn't get the very, very beginning. I just kind of got it where it kicked in there. But the very, very beginning of this song, it sounds a whole lot like that Time After Time by Cyndi Lauper. Do y'all remember that? I don't know what it is. I heard that. I was like, what is he doing here? And then the song kicks in. I was like, all right, yeah. I'm clipping that out. Man, it just takes off. It's a great song. I agree with you. I was gonna say it's my favorite song on the album. I probably know Alibis might be, but it's real close with that, man. One of those two.
Yeah.
Love the song, dude. It just takes off. Such a catchy chorus. It gets stuck in your head. Blazing guitar solo. I gave it a 9. Outstanding, but 9.5 doesn't bother me at all, man. It's right in there. It's one of the best on the album. Yeah.
All right. Anthony, what do you think about Bad Love?
Songfacts.com, it says, Clapton's record company, Warner Brothers,
was pressuring him to write something similar to Layla so they could have a hit from the Journeyman album, and Clapton complied, following his Layla formula to create Bad Love. And I can totally hear Layla in this song.
I can hear that too.
Mick Jones from the band Foreigner wrote this with Clapton. It's not the first time Jones had worked with other rock stars. He produced Van Halen's 5150 album. Fun to learn that fact. Right. I didn't know that. This more than 19. What's that?
We talked about that actually.
Yeah.
Dude, what did I have for breakfast yesterday? I don't know.
It's been a while. Let's just be honest.
It's been a minute. Yeah. It's been a minute since we talked about it.
I'm not the Van Halen fan over here like you are. So,
as a matter of fact, didn't I say that they were trying to sound like Foreigner on that at some point?
You may be.
He's a Foreigner.
I do actually remember saying that. It's crazy, isn't
it? Yeah. Well, there was a song. Go ahead. Sorry.
This might change your mind to being perfection for Clapton, because this won the 1990 Grammy for Best Rock Vocal Performance. Clapton got a Grammy in 72 for playing on the concert for Bangladesh, which won Best Album, but this is his first as a solo artist. He won six more in 1993, including three for Tears in Heaven. That was a juggernaut, so we know that. Phil Collins played drums and sang backup on this track. They first collaborated when Clapton played on Collins' debut solo album in 1981. A lot of heavy hitters on here. So.
Yeah, big time.
You know, this is one of those songs that when it kind of starts, you're kind of sure about. But man, when this song kicks in, it is just, I don't know, catchy. I wrote catchy chorus, guitars, drums, vocals. It's all dialed in, man. It's a 9 for me. It's outstanding, but I dabbled with perfection there for a bit too, especially after hearing one vocal performance for this. I mean, that's some high standards. So I'll stick with my 9. But
don't blame you, man. You know, that I was going to comment on that, man. These songs to you and to your ears and how you feel, it shouldn't matter what the public thinks. It should be matter what you think. You know what I'm saying? And I get that it got these things, but in my ears, you know, it's an incredible tune.
I mean, what I'm saying is that it's a 9. It's outstanding in my mind. But you could say if you want to throw perfection on something, someone who won a freaking Grammy for something, that's probably perfection, you know, for him. You know, if you win a Grammy for it, you can't get more perfect than that.
Yeah, I get it. I just know that.
What's that, Chris?
It's a pretty biased over there. That's
perfection,
all.
Perfection, man. The Grammys isn't always known for picking the best artists. No.
Ain't that the truth? That's what I was getting ready to say. I was like, "Hey, dude,
I'm the first
are you
one
effing kidding me, Metallica? Come on,
I'm first one to hate on the Grammys and the Oscars because they are just a popularity contest. But I'm saying, if he did get an award for it, that's some, you know.
I mean, it was the same effing show that Metallica lost. Are you kidding me?
Was it really? I remember that because I thought Metallica
great decisions that year, man.
Yeah, so don't. We're not going to talk about how the Grammys are always right.
I'm
However,
just saying,
right
if you
want to
say perfection, he won an award for this one, so you could say perfection for that reason alone. So
very true.
It's a great
true.
Song. I can't argue that.
Yeah, and it's absolutely
like killer. If you said 10, I'd have been like, okay. I mean, it didn't bother me. Yeah.
I would. I had a hard time not giving it 10 myself. Like I said, that's why I gave it a 9.5.
It kind of is, honestly, man. I mean, I get it. You know, it really is.
But yeah, I mean, it's dang near it, for sure. All right, let's go to track number 4. It's called Running on Faith. So the formula on the album goes rocker, slow down, rocker, slow down. And of course, Running on Faith slows it down. I mean, it's a soulful song. I mean, it absolutely showcases what Clapton does on a little bit softer side. I mean, it's stripped down. I like the acoustic pieces in it. His vocals are absolutely at center stage. They are highlighting his vocals and a little bit of that acoustic guitar on this song. It's heartfelt, no doubt about it. However, it's not one of my highest rated songs on the album. I still think it's great, and that's where I stand. I gave this one a 7. I think it's worthy of a 7, and it's where I'm going to be. Chris, what do you think about Running on Faith?
Yeah, that's exactly what I gave it. I gave it a 7 as well. It's a good mid-tempo song. I feel like his vocals are really smooth. I like the background vocals. It's almost like he's got a church choir back there.
He does, you know, yeah, right, on. Right. I agree.
And you know what? For some reason, it feels so much like another song, but I can't quite put my finger on what that song is. Something like the City of New Orleans. You know what I'm talking about?
It sounds like a Ray Charles song is what it sounds
like. Yeah, I could see something like that. Almost, or like, you know, a newer like Ray LaMontagne or something like that. But like, it definitely has a feel to that. But I also think it's a great song. Not much more than that, but not anything less than that. So, like, 7 felt fair to me on this one.
I couldn't agree with you more. Anthony, what do you think about Running on Faith?
So, it's a 21 for us then. So,
hey, I just did the same.
You did the same thing.
I guess 7. I think it's a great tune. I was trying to do the math in my head. Like, 7, 14. Yeah, 21. That's right. so, I wrote Slowing It Down a Bit. This song has sort of a bluesy power ballad vibe to it. That's kind of what I got out of it. It somehow works together. It's not as strong as the previous three, but still a solid tune from start to finish, man. So, yeah. It's like kind of hard to categorize this song. You know, it's sort of blues, sort of modernized, sort of this, sort of that. So, but great tune. Do enjoy it.
Yeah, it definitely has that blues tinge. And just the way he plays his guitar, it's in his fingers, man.
Eric does sound good on it, though. His vocals are really good on it.
His vocals are outstanding. Absolutely. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, let's go ahead and go to track 5. It's called Hard Times. Hit it, Chris.
Speaking of Ray Charles.
Man, I'm kidding.
My mother told me before she passed away, said, son, when I'm gone, don't forget to pray, 'cause there'll be hard times. Lord, those hard times, better than I. I soon found out just what she meant when I had to pawn my clothes just to pay the rent. Talking about hard times, all those hard times. Who knows better than I?
All right, guys. So this one, piano-driven Hard Times. I mean, it's a nasty blues guitar tone as well. It's kind of a weird mixture. I mean, the horn section fits nicely. I normally will complain. But it fits nicely. I can close my eyes, and when I hear this, I'm thinking this is probably what it sounded like in a smoky bar in the 50s down south. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I think about.
Sucking on some ribs.
right. I mean, just taking it back that way. I mean, there's not really, it's not fast paced, no searing guitar riffs. I mean, this is not your typical Clapton. His vocals are certainly passionate, and there's a little bit of intensity, but at the same time, it's kind of held back just a hair. I mean, it's still very good in my opinion. I don't think it's anything more than that. And I hate to take away from it. I don't know if I scored it too high. I gave it a 6 because it's completely different from everything else.
That's way too low, man.
Oh, well, y'all. Okay. Well, I was. You know, I didn't know. I figured Chris might dig this one because this is pure blues. I mean, there's no denying. There's nothing rock about this. This is pure blues.
I'm telling you, man, this podcast has opened my eyes up to the blues, man. When you get a blues jam on, man, I just go gaga for it these days. I don't know what it is. I didn't realize it until we started this podcast, and I enjoyed it so much.
Well, like I said, it's a departure from everything that we've heard up to this point in this record. I still like it. And I think it's very good. And that's kind of where I'm going to stand. Chris, what do you think about Hard Times?
Well, I probably went a little high on this one, to be honest with you, but that's where it is. And when I was listening to it, that's where it hit me.
Well, I knew you would like it. I had a feeling you would like it.
Well, I know it's cover. Okay. But I didn't let that factor into my decision. This is the perfect mix of soulful vocals and blues and guitar. He plays guitar great in this. And you get all these other accompanying instruments with it. And it does, man. If a song can put you in a place and time and transport you back to the 50s in some smoky club, you know, that speaks volumes. A lot of songs can't do that. And when somebody's got the power to do that in a song, I tend to kind of bump it for that, too. I went 9. I think it's outstanding. I know that's high.
It's not.
But I love it, man. I think it's a great song. It was one of my favorite songs to listen to the whole time when I was doing my commute listening to this. So, like, every time it was coming on, I was like, yeah, and I, like, crank it up and listen to that. I mean, it's love it, man. It's a great song.
Agreed.
Wow. Yeah.
All right, Anthony, go ahead and tell me how much wrong I am. Wow.
I mean, this song is fire, guys. I mean, it's a sultry, deep South blues jam that just works from start to finish. I love the saxophone, the guitar. I love Clapton's vocals. I mean, he's got such good vocals for a song like this. I never knew this guy could sing like this. It's a 9 for me, too, man. I think it's an outstanding tune. I love this one. This is another highlight for me on here. Like I said, I didn't know I got into blues songs like this. In fact, that Bonamassa, what's the guy's name?
Joe Bonamassa.
He came on after this with one of his songs, and I was just floored by how good it sounded. I don't know the name of it, but I really love this tone and the sound of the blues. That guitar is just nasty and muddy and dirty. It just, it's good stuff, man. I'm going to tell
you, before you go any further, if you dive into Bonamassa, I mean, this man released album after album, year after year. He is a blues legend. I mean, he was a kid when he started this.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
How old was he now? Has he passed away?
Oh, he's probably our age, but I mean, he was playing like Johnny Carson back when he's like 8 years old or something. Maybe Jay Leno or something. I mean, it was crazy. He was real young when he started. He was like a prodigy.
It was the song, No Good Place for the Lonely. That's the one. Wow. That's when it came on. Joe Bonamassa, yeah, it's from his Blues of Desperation album, I think.
Yeah, it's not one of his older ones. I think it's a mid one, but that's
2016.
Dude. Yeah, yeah, he is. God, he's great. He's a great guitarist, and
a sick
guy.
Song, man. I'm telling you,
he's a Gibson guy. Good stuff. All right, fair
speaking
enough.
Since you brought that up, what's Clapton's typical setup he's got? What kind of guitar? And
Stratocaster, man. He plays. Yeah. He's a Fender Stratocaster guy through and through. He played
with all the blues tones. You would expect more like something a little more bluesy in a Stratocaster, I think. I don't know.
Not necessarily. You hear the blues comes from, like, Buddy Guy was a Stratocaster guy. Now, B.B. King was a Gibson guy. He played a Lucille guitar, if you will. Yeah. I mean, it was a killer ES-335. When you see these blues folks come out, Kenny Wayne Shepherd, a young gun, if you will, he played Stratocasters. John Mayer, he played Stratocasters until he switched to Paul Reed Smith's. I mean,
they made him a Stratocaster for that company, right?
They did. I mean, seriously.
They did. It's got his name on it. It looks just like a Stratocaster. Right?
Literally, it doesn't look just like one, but it's got the three single coils like you would expect. Bonamassa is on the opposite edge. He plays his blues on Gibsons for the most part. He does play some Fender on occasion, but he's a Gibson guy. He does, and they're humbucker pickups, which is weird. But that's what B.B. King did. He played through humbuckers.
So much stuff.
And the difference if you guys don't know, the humbucker's the double pickup, and the single coil is obviously a little single thing. So those
no idea.
Complete different tonalities. And it's amazing when you think about people that can pull. I mean, when Clapton started, dude, he was playing on SG. That's really? A damn Angus Young guitar. I mean, he's got one of those back in the day. He played Les Pauls back when he was in Cream, I think.
It just goes to show you can play whatever you want to if you know how to dial it in, right?
Not to get off subject there, but I know Lemmy from Motorhead. I don't know much about guitars, but he ran his bass through a Marshall, I think, amp or something, which was traditionally for guitars, I think. So completely changed the sound of the bass guitar. So the little bit of guitar knowledge.
It drove it, man. It drove the speakers to almost the point of blowing them.
I know. It's crazy.
I mean, it's insane. Yeah. I mean, I know it's a little tangent, but yeah, man, blues can be played on anything. It's all in your fingertips.
It is a tangent, but I think it's good to know stuff like this because, like, you know, we kind of – you look at people who, you know, drink wine, right? And they'll sit around and they'll dissect it and they'll be like, oh, it has these, you know, this is kind of the base of this stuff, right? I mean, like, we, you know, what kind of rig they got, you know, what kind of guitar they use, what kind of amp, what kind of pedals they got in there. Like, it creates the specific sound that they're known for. So it's good knowledge to have out there, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, let's dive down and we'll do track number 6. It's called Hound Dog. Hit it, Chris.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog.
As discussed in the Rod Stewart review, Elvis's version can't be topped.
I agree with that. Yeah.
All right. I do think this is better than Rod Stewart's version, but barely.
Rod Stewart's version of Hound Dog?
Yeah. Rod Stewart did a cover of this.
Did he? I don't think it was it on that album we did?
No,
it wasn't.
On the album we did or not, but he did a cover of this.
Okay. That's where I was confused. Well. I thought we'd done it already.
It's he did a cover back in the 70s when he first started going solo.
Oh, I got you.
And it's barely better than that. But anybody that tries to top the King, I don't think it can be done on this tune. This song is just so in my mind, in my body, in my soul, it's Elvis Presley. However, Clapton pays absolute perfect respect to this tune. He adds his flavor, his licks throughout. I have a hard time giving anything other than a good because I think it's a good song. And that's where I stood. I gave this one a 5. Chris, what'd you think about Hound Dog?
It's definitely an interesting song because I'm with you, man. If I'd have never heard Elvis's version, which, by the way, isn't the original version, right? But Elvis made that song his own. That's just all there is to it.
Correct.
That song.
I would probably rate it higher, but I'm with you. I agree 100%, man. This is Elvis's song, and he does not do it as well as Elvis. So you have to take that in consideration. I do think he nails it in his own way, and you can't deny that you're sitting there bobbing your head, tapping your toe when you're listening to it. I gave it 6. I think it's very good, but I mean, it's. I agree, man. It's not Elvis's version.
Yeah, no, I agree. All right, Anthony, what'd you think about Hound Dog?
We'll keep it quick. I gave it a 6 too. Very good. It's not a skipper, but not a favorite either. It's
right.
It's a decent tune. I don't personally love Elvis covers all the time. I get a little tired of them sometimes. So, I mean, it's like, oh, God, here's another Elvis cover. This album is about 12 songs too many. There's 2 I'd probably cut. But if you cut this one and put it as a B-side to a single, I wouldn't hate that either. So, but
12 songs you'd cut? So you didn't want to
say that? Did I say that? There's 12 songs. Two songs.
He said 2.
He said 2. I thought he said 12. Yeah, I was like, wow, he really go kill this one.
And I think the 2 that I would cut are coming up. So I'll probably still leave this one. But this could be a single on a B-side on a single more than on an album, personally. But
Still a very good tune. I couldn't agree with you. I think that would have been a perfect idea for this song, but I guess he was just filling space on this record, to be honest with you. I mean, he kept it right at an hour.
There's 2 he could have cut and left this one, and I'd have been fine with this one still being here. The other 2, he probably could have cut and wouldn't have missed them.
Right on. All right, let's go to track 7. It's called No Alibis. Chris?
Hello.
No Alibis, absolutely pop infused, but I'm not going to knock it for this song at all. It's catchy as can be, driving rhythm. I mean, you can't resist this one. Vocals, smooth, polished. Once again, 80s production. But I'm just going to say I can't hold anything against this song. I love it. This is probably my favorite song on the album outside of Pretending. I love Pretending, and this is my close, it'd be a close second. Absolutely. I mean, it's neck for neck. I mean, Clapton owns it. Absolutely. It is, maybe it is radio perfection. I don't know. I gave it an outstanding. I think it's a 9, and that's where I'm going to stand on this one. I do love this song. Chris, what do you think about Alibis?
Yeah, I think I might have tipped my hat a little earlier in the episode. When I said this might be my favorite song. I love everything about it. I love the chorus. I love the guitar work. Not just the solo, which is great, but just the way he kind of infuses it in just between like chorus riffs there, what have you. The background vocals are fantastic on this one. I love his guitar tone. Like we discussed this earlier, I was like, "What kind of?" You know, asked Jimmy what kind of setup he's got right here. But we already did that. I think it's the perfect blend of blues and mainstream rock, if you will. He's become a master of that. I think the big songs on this album kind of fit that description. I think it's not straight up rock. It's not like ZZ Top kind of stuff, but it's kind of rock in its own way. It's more like pop rock, I guess, but he infuses the blues with it so well, and I'm not sure too many other people who are capable of that, to be honest with you. I gave it a 9, but if somebody threw a 10 out there, I wouldn't disagree, man. I think it's an outstanding song. Yeah,
yeah, I couldn't argue it either. Anthony, what'd you think about No Alibis?
Songfacts.com. Eric Clapton made very transgressive, passionate music in the 60s and 70s, much of it with bands like Cream and Derek and the Dominoes. By the late 80s, his songs got more generic and were crafted more for hit potential than to break down sonic barriers. No Alibis is one of those songs, a smooth rocker that finds him confronting a lover who keeps telling him lies. And he goes on to say, do the backup singers on this one sound familiar? Sharing a few lines and some harmony with Clapton is Daryl Hall of Hall & Oates. And it says, yep. And it says, she's less prominent, but Chaka Khan is also in the mix, along with another female backing singer, Lonnie Graves. Says Chaka is better heard on Pretending, also from the Journeyman album. So,
wow. Never knew that.
That's amazing. Yeah, I didn't know that either.
He's pulling in some names on his album.
That's one of those. I love the background vocals. dude just knows a lot of people, apparently. He pulls people from everywhere. Let's go make a record, you know.
This was a time of sessions, man. All these people that you're naming were probably session musicians at the top. Like Phil Collins is all over the 80s, not just on his own music and Genesis. He's everywhere. I mean, he played on Al DiMeola albums, if that just tells you anything. And he's just, that's crazy. I mean, doesn't shock me, but it's cool to know Chaka Khan, dude. And she found some fame there late 90s, or late 80s, I should say.
Yeah.
So, that says a lot. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, this song, man, I love it. It's a solid tune from start to finish. I can see why it was single. It was a single, super catchy, sticks in your head. Yeah. Eric sounds amazing. Guitar's on point. Band is too. It's hard not to enjoy it. This is a 9 for me, too. I think it's an outstanding tune. Yeah. So, but a 10 is not out of the realm of possibilities either. So,
Agree. All right, guys. Let's go to track number 8. It's called Run So Far. Chris?
Smile where it's thin, and I
All right, guys. So Run So Far. I've already brought it up once today. It's no surprise. The backing vocals, if you guys didn't know it, is none less than the Beatle himself, George Harrison, and guitar work as well is played a little bit by George. They were friends. They were lifelong friends. And this is just although this may not be the greatest song on the album, I mean, it's not a standout track, but this one did grow on me during the listen. I think his vocals, Eric Clapton's vocals, are just absolutely filled with that sense of sorrow that you get in some blues tunes. And I hate to say this, but man, George Harrison compliments him vocally so well in this style. I would have loved to see them do more music together, especially during this time frame, because George Harrison had just come off of a great solo album he had released maybe a couple years before. But nonetheless, I think it's a solid track. It certainly is a little bit of a different musical style. Although it is blues, it certainly has that radio-friendly style to it, if you will. I do think it's very good. I gave this one a 6. Chris, what'd you think about Run So Far?
I got to tell you, man, I did not know. Okay, I wrote this before I knew anything about George Harrison being involved with this song. Here's my review. I was like, I'm not really a big fan of this one. It feels a little bit like some cheesy early days Beatles song. Like, Here Comes the Sun. That's what I wrote. That's what I wrote. I had no idea that George Harrison wrote this song. I had no idea that he sang and played on this song.
Slow down.
That's what I wrote.
Here Comes the Sun is not cheesy. It's an absolute Beatles classic.
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
Come on, it's a Beatles classic. Oh, man. My
God. But here's the thing with the Beatles. And I'm not going to go too far into this. They've got some great music, but their early stuff, it feels like it's just commercials or something, like jingles they write, like if you owned a candy bar company. 60s. So here, write me a jingle.
They were kids. They were like kids.
I know, but that's what it feels like to me, and I'm never going to sit there and listen to early Beatles music. I'm just not, and this is what that feels like.
Oh, yeah, you are.
Now, I will say, once the drugs came in, they started making good music, but before that, it was just, it's all poppy kind of nonsense.
Well, that's what they were when they came out. They were a sugar pop.
I don't know what to say.
Okay, so I'm going to keep going with my review here.
Keep going, please. Oh, my God. The batteries are 100% on my computer.
Because we go from like a string of great songs, blues-driven tunes that are fantastic, to this. I don't think it's the worst song on the album. I think it's the second worst song on the album. I gave it a 4.5. I think it's between good and meh. And I'd probably skip it every time it came on the radio. To be honest.
Now, there's two songs that are infinitely worse than this on this one, I think, personally.
Well, yeah, I didn't give it the flush. There's worse music on here. But I'm just saying it's all it's right, down Anthony. There, you know, for me. Yeah.
Run So Far, Anthony. Please go.
It's a solid tune, man. It doesn't really pop or stand out in any way, but that doesn't make it a bad song. Songs don't have to always do that. I still do enjoy listening to it. It's got a nice groove and a nice vibe to it. I still gave it a 6. I think it's a very good tune. No real issues.
Fair enough.
Just didn't really pop, stand out to me.
How often when this comes on would you guys hit fast forward?
I don't because I love George Harrison's vocals in it, man. It's just something about it. I wouldn't skip this one at all.
Y'all such damn.
But there are, I'm not going to deny, there's a couple of tunes I will skip every single time. So
on this album? And this isn't one of them? Okay.
This ain't one of them. I do like, I like George Harrison. I don't know what it is about. It's probably because
he's
a guitar player.
Was this a George Harrison song? There's one on here that was a George Harrison song.
He wrote this
writer,
song.
Writer, yeah.
Okay.
So this is like pure George Harrison.
And I did not know that. I'm proud of myself for picking that out because it just, to me, it felt like some cheesy early Beatles song.
Lovely. All right, let's go to track number 9. It's called Old Love.
I can feel your body. I'm lying in my bed. Too much confusion. Going round through my head. Makes me so angry. And all that the flames still burn.
God, am actually scared to give my review on this song. Holy crap.
You shouldn't be. This is an awesome song.
Okay, okay, good. Cause this is, I figured this is going to get crapped on because of the length. No. This song is over 6 minutes long, so I figured you old Captain, I hate long songs.
Jimmy, I just jammed out to Empire of the Clouds like twice in a week with Iron Maiden. So you think I'm going to care about a long song?
I know you don't mind. I know that Captain Mr. I don't have the attention span to get past 3 minutes. We'll absolutely slaughter this song.
Mr. ADD over here gets fed up with an 8 minute song.
I'm not gonna lie. All right. Anyway,
is this song 8 minutes?
Over 6 minutes. This song is 6 minutes, 25 seconds. Okay. I think it's an epic tune that absolutely showcases the tastefulness that Eric Clapton has on the guitar, and his vocals are just so perfect for this song. Yes, it's a slower one, but it has those instrumental sections, the feels, if you will, that just bring out the feeling of blues. I mean, this is absolutely a blues song that I kept my attention the entire 6 minutes. I think it's mesmerizing the way he plays, the way he can sing and play at the same time. It captures my mind. It just makes me close my eyes, and I can see him playing this stuff, although I've never seen him play this song live. I mean, absolutely fantastic song. I think it's great, and it certainly is a little better than the previous track. I gave it a 7. Chris, what'd you think about Old Love?
Yeah, I think it's a solid bluesy ballad. It's got great guitar work in it. I see Robert Cray played on this with him, which is a nice little nod there.
He's a blues.
It was actually the very first concert I ever saw. He opened for Huey Lewis.
Stratocaster player.
Yeah. Yeah, but he was awesome. It is a big jam session. I think about 3 minutes in, they just quit singing and just play guitars the rest of the way. I'll say it is this kind of song you got to be in the mood for. I'll admit that. I think maybe the first couple times I listened to this, I wasn't in the mood. I wasn't really feeling it. But the last few times I listened to it, I really got into it. I gave it 7 as well. I think it's great. It's a little long, but I don't mind jams. I don't know, man. It just depends on the music sometimes. Sometimes I don't mind something a little long, but this one didn't bother me. I thought it was good.
Fair enough. All right.
Great, Anthony, I should
say. What you think about Old Love?
Songfacts.com. Clapton wrote this song with the blues musician Robert Cray, who plays guitar on the track, which Chris just stole my thunder from. It wasn't released as a single, but it's one of his most popular songs to play live. Oh, wow. So that was kind of interesting to learn.
I didn't see him until the 90s, so I don't know.
Yeah, it's for me, personally, man, I'm back to those blues, and I like it a lot. Eric can make a blues guitar sing perfectly, and his voice is just great for music like this. You can feel the heartache. Never knew he was that good at the blues until I heard this album. That's what I wrote. It's a 9 for me, man. This is an outstanding tune. This is another one just gets me in the feels when I hear it every time. So, should be higher on the album, probably. Should have been a single. It's incredible.
Let's get this thing rolling, my friend. Track 10, Breaking Point. Guys, as we're moving toward the end of this record, y'all gonna kill me on this. It's gonna be hilarious.
No, you're not.
Oh no, you guys are gonna kill me. Outside of my complaints of 80s production, and it is absolutely there. It's got that synth sound. It's got the Eric Clapton or the Phil Collins drum sound. It's upbeat. I think it's catchy.
Phil Collins drum sound? Hit number 3 on this one on the Casio? Are you kidding me? That's Phil Collins?
It's got the Phil Collins sound. Listen to me. I don't think he's even playing on this one. But nonetheless,
go ahead.
I think this song is catchy. I mean, it absolutely was catchy to me throughout the, you know, the past few weeks. I remember listening to it a long time ago and thinking, yeah, you know, because there was a time I didn't even listen to the second side of this album. But for the most part, it grew on me, man. I think it absolutely grew on me. It's got some killer guitar stuff working inside of it, just going throughout.
Spit it out, Jimmy.
I think it's a sleeper. I gave the song a 7. I think it's great. I think it's a hidden gem in the back part of this song that is only plagued by 80s production. That's how I feel. All right, Chris. Breaking point. Kill it.
Yeah, I think this is almost the breaking point of this album. I had to say that. That just felt like the fit right there.
Even my kids through the week were going like, is that song what? Not that song again.
No. I just had to say that. Okay, it's a very dated song, right? The Casio synth is kicking in yet again. there's a lot of good and a lot of bad in this song. So I get where you're coming from, Jimmy. I like the chorus. It's catchy. It's something that sticks in your head. And I'm a sucker for a good chorus. There's like a swell in the bridge on this song that I feel like fits pretty well. And guitar wise, it's good, man. He's got some good riffs in there. I don't deny that. It feels like something to be on Miami Vice, man. It's got that kind of sound to it.
Right in the time frame.
And this, yeah. Well, it's not right in the time frame because that was early 80s and this is like almost 1990 at this point.
No, it was mid to late 80s
for that Vice. Miami
Vice. Oh, this was the popular time of Miami Vice, dude.
Okay. Vice entered in 89, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, the same year.
So when this album came, all right, regardless.
This is a good season 5 song for Miami Vice.
It's dated. I mean, there's saxophones in there that kick in at some point. I like that. I mean, I can see how this is a polarizing song, right? I gave it a 5.5. I think it's between good and very good. I can understand why somebody would like it, but it's very dated, and that Casio sound is just like so prominent throughout this thing, man. I don't know how else to say it.
I'm with you.
It's lazy. It's get a band to play. Don't have like, you know, just, I don't know, man. But he can take that crappy bass line and layer stuff over top of it and make it sound good. He's got that much talent. And that's kind of what we have here. So, yeah, 5.5 seems fair for me.
I knew this was going to get.
I bet Anthony bashes it though. Let's see what Anthony's got.
All right, Anthony. Breaking point. I know you already hated it from the first day you texted about it. Hit it.
Everything Chris said is what I feel about this song. It's like I like it and I hate it. I like it and I hate it. It's like that scene in Chinatown. She's my sister. She's my brother. You know that scene, right, scene where he gets slapping her at the end of that movie. Sister, my daughter, that's the way I feel about this song. I wrote that the album dips twice for me, and it's this song and the next one. This is the better of the two songs, and this song starts strong, but it slowly meanders into the other direction by the end of it. Clapton sounds great. Chorus is sort of catchy, repetitive but catchy. There are things to enjoy in this song, things I like, but there's not enough here for more than a 5 for me, which is a good. And this might be one of the few times where I'm actually lower than both of you guys. So, that might be, I don't think it's a kind 5. I think it's a solid 5 for me. It's a good song. It's just,
I can't really disagree with that. A good feels fair for this. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with y'all. I get it. But like I said, it just grew on me. That's all.
Telling you, if this wasn't the CD age, there are at least 2 songs that would have not made this album. Maybe, and this 3. Is probably one of them, and the next one, or Hound Dog in one of these 2. Because the CD age, he's like, we have 12 songs. Let's just put them all on there, you know.
And they're all getting longer, too, right? I mean, like, these 3, like, okay, Old Love's a solid tune, but, like, Breaking Point 537, Lean Me On 552. I mean, that's too damn long for this.
It's the CD age, man.
You know? Like,
you didn't have to cut anymore. You had to worry about compression or time or anything like that. So you could just do what you wanted to. That's what it was.
Yeah. Fair enough.
People's interest. Let's go to the next one. You ready, James?
Track number 11, Lead Me On.
Don't. So you lie 'cause you think I won't. To make believe you love when you don't.
Anthony, I don't even know what you're going to say about this song, and I pray to God that Eric Clapton never listens to this podcast.
I'll be
all
nice,
right,
man.
Let me continue.
All right, Eric Clapton is never going to listen to this podcast.
Yeah, I know, dude.
Look, hope you don't. He might copyright strike us.
He probably will. He'll like send his lawyers for us.
Yeah, all right. So this is what I wrote. Leave Me On is one song I can't appreciate at all. It's tough to get through. I don't know who the female vocalist is, and I apologize for anybody having to listen to it. I feel terrible to say it, but I skip this song every time. I listen to it a couple times forcefully just so I could review it and try to be fair about it. I can't. This song is horrible in every sense of the word. I gave it a 1. Chris.
A 1? What is a 1
for us? You're
actually
lower than me.
Horrible.
I did not expect that.
It's horrible. That is our 1 on our scale. In case you, obviously, you guys don't know our scale outside of 5.
No, I know the scale. I know the scale.
Yeah, it's horrible.
I got to be looking at it, but.
All right. Okay. Man, I kind of echo everything you have to say on this. Slow, boring, completely out of place. I had to fight every urge in my body to not hit fast forward every time it came
every
on.
Time.
I forced
every
myself
time,
to
dude.
Listen to it once all the way through.
Twice.
To make sure it didn't get better. And I was like, okay, it doesn't get better. So, and this damn monstrosity goes on for almost 6 minutes. I mean,
it is terrible.
What the hell is he thinking by putting this on this album? It's got to be a favor to somebody. That's all there is to it, man.
That's what
I give
was
it a 2.
Thinking.
I give it a 2 for bad, but I don't disagree with your 1, by the way. It could have been 0, honestly. I mean, this may be the worst song we've ever reviewed. I'm just going to be honest with you.
It could
How many
well
years
be.
We, with 5 years we've been doing this? This may
it
be the worst
like
song we've ever reviewed.
It seems like
something
you'd hear at your aunt's funeral.
Exactly. It does feel like something you'd hear at your aunt's funeral.
Terrible. Like I said, and I am a huge, huge Eric Clapton fan. And most bands have stinkers. This has to be his stinker of stinkers.
Yeah,
all right.
I'm glad. Oh, by the way, I forgot to hit my
Chris's flush of the week.
Oh, yeah. I guess my
in,
one
in case you were
up.
Wondering. Yes.
Also my flush.
Go ahead,
also
Andy,
my flush. All right, Anthony. Cool. What do you think about Leave Me On?
I gave it a 4. I gave it a meh. It's just one of those songs that even as a ballad person, I don't truly get. It's like, There's things there that should, I don't know, man. It doesn't work. I try to be a positive person. That's just the way I try to live my days. I try to find the good in everything if I can find an ounce of good. And there might be a little bit of good here. You know, Eric does sound good, and there's some other good stuff around. It's okay. The ballot-wise is fine. I think it's the female vocals that kind of throws it all off for me. It doesn't really mesh with his vocals. She doesn't sound as good as she could on this song. There's just something about the thing. It has more of this like 80s soft rock, I'm sitting in a dentist chair kind of feel to it, you know? And I don't know. It's
terrible,
not Clapton.
It's terrible.
Yeah. So I gave it a 4. I was being a little more just not going to be as crucial. Give it a little, at least there's some way made a song. We've never made a song. So I'll give him credit for that. But at the same time, it just doesn't fit, man. I read somewhere that, he liked the pod, like the, he got a vibe from one of his albums where he did like multiple genres on an album, and he wanted to kind of duplicate that again here instead of just keeping like a central focus. So I think it's why we might be getting more range, is because he was trying to do different songs on one album, like because he got a positive reaction to it before. So
you know what?
I read that somewhere along the way.
I do get like a We Are the World feel kind of vibe on this album where he just brings all these damn musicians in. And like, I guess these Womack sisters came in here on this. I see you.
Womack sisters.
What's their name? Cecile and Linda Womack.
It was probably one of those situations where you say, Eric, I'll give you a little something underneath the console if you let me have this song on the album.
Nah, I don't think it was that. But I do think he's probably doing a favor for somebody, honestly. I do. Yeah,
it was probably somebody's kid, somebody's daughter, somebody that wrote something. And
yeah,
you know.
I don't know, man.
Or it was the cocaine. Maybe it was the cocaine. Maybe it sounded really good when he was high on cocaine. Who knows?
I can't remember if he was on the cocaine these years or not, to be honest with you. I think
Dude, this doesn't seem like a coked up song to me. This is like the opposite.
I don't know, man. You're sitting at the dashboard of the in the studio going, oh, I kind of like the way that sounds.
You crashed a little
man.
Bit, maybe. I don't know.
Dude, I think this might have been his heroin years. I can't remember.
Well, that makes even more
that
sense.
That makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that. He was an addict. There's no denying it. He knows it. He admitted it. He struggled for a long time. So, yeah, dude, it's just a song I could absolutely never hear again and be okay with that. All right, let's go to the last track. It's called Before You Accuse Me.
Take a look at yourself.
Guys, so before you accuse me, I'm going to go ahead and say it. Thank goodness we can rinse out our ears after that last monstrosity.
Agreed.
Because this is absolute blues greatness. It closes the album out perfectly. This possibly could be a sleeper for any of you guys. It's absolutely outstanding and arguably a missed opportunity by him to release this to the world as I don't know if it's a single or not, but it's absolute outstanding work. I gave it a 9. This is the perfect way to close the album. I couldn't pick a different song to close this album out.
Agreed.
Chris, what do you think about Before You Accuse Me?
He pretty much read my review right here. Yeah, thank God we dropped this at the end and finished strong. It just rocks. Fantastic guitar riffs, catchy chorus, ridiculous guitar solo. It's my sleeper of the night. It's strong, one of the strongest closures we've had all year. Great way to bookend this album. Thank God Lead Me On wasn't the final song on this album is all I can say.
Yeah, could it never get
I gave it a 9 as well. It's outstanding. Yeah,
awesome. Love it. Anthony, Before You Accuse
Me. It feels like a Roadhouse type tune. You know what I mean?
Dude, it absolutely would, it would have been in Roadhouse and fit perfectly. You're absolutely right.
Songfacts.com. Clapton used to perform this song in his early days with the Yardbirds. Mm. He never considered putting it on a record until guitarist Robert Cray and drummer Jim Keltner started jamming on the tune one day in the studio during the Journeyman sessions. The Cray-Clapton combo on this song make it a favorite of guitar aficionados. And that's just crazy to me. Robert Cray and this guy were sitting around just jamming in the studio, and Clapton's like, oh, hell, that sounds good. Let's do it. The talent, man. It's just ridiculous to me sometimes. And I wrote Back to the Blues, and not only the blues, but a blues shuffle. Take My Money Now. That's all I wrote in my notes. I'm digging this one. It's a great way to send this album off. Eric is nailing the vocals. Guitar is nasty and on point. This gives me the feels all over, and I really love it. It's a massive, gigantic, bombastic step up from the last two songs, which shouldn't even be on this album. It's a 9. It's outstanding.
Here we go, boys. All right, guys. So my final thoughts on this, overall, I think it is a incredible album. Journeyman is just certainly an incredible album. It does showcase Eric Clapton's incredible guitar playing and vocal stylings. I mean, you've got blistering blues rock songs on here to a couple of decent ballads and one that absolutely is garbage. But he delivers top-notch musicianship throughout this record. The album's plagued by dated production. I can't deny it. Pure 80s sound, pure 80s production. However, some of these songs are produced at its finest hour of the time and is a snapshot as what it was like back when this recording sessions were going on in 89, 88. I think it is a fun ride. One song that could have been absolutely erased from all of history. It is a great listening experience, and I think it's a classic record in Eric Clapton's extensive discography in my ears. Once again, I'm a fanboy of Eric Clapton, and I tried to keep that in check, which I think some of my scores absolutely true as I could give them. Overall, this came out to be a 7, which means it's great. If Lead Me On had not been on this record, it probably would have been a 7.5. Nonetheless, I'm going to stay true to my score because I think it's a great album. It's not his best. He's got two other albums, I think, that will top this in his discography. And it's worthy of being the third best record in his, probably. Pilgrim's good, too, but it would be between this and Pilgrim as far as being in third place, in my opinion. That's how
first
I rated
two,
it, boys.
If you don't mind me asking.
I would dare say 461, Ocean Boulevard, and Slow Hand. That's going to be your two best albums by the man. Slow Hand is arguable because it was late 70s, early 80s. I think it might have been 79 or 80, and it had Cocaine on it, which is one of his biggest tunes. I think Layla's on that one, too, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, that, you know, he, or no, After Midnight. Maybe it's After Midnight's on that one. And he absolutely destroys. So, it's a great, great listen. I haven't listened to that one in probably a couple years. I really need to get that one back in rotation because it's a good blues rock album. And that was definitely in his Cocaine years. So, yeah, it's rocking.
He wrote a song about it.
Yeah, he certainly did. He certainly did. And She Don't Lie. All right, Chris, go ahead. What do you think about the overall Journeyman?
It was a really good pick, man. You know, it's you know, I'm a blues rock guy, so you probably figured this would fall right in my wheelhouse. I'm glad I had a few weeks to kind of let this one sink in because early on, I'm not sure I would have rated it accurately. As you know, once I got several listens to this one in, so I was able to give it a pretty good rating. I think, you know, songs 1 through 7, fantastic. I mean, absolutely fantastic, and it closes strong as hell. So that's 8 songs that are really good on this album. And then you've got, like, you know, there's a string between 8 and 11 there where you got some good and some bad. I mean, that's just the way it
is.
I think we all kind of agreed on that. You guys seem to like that Beatles song a little more than I did, but, you know, whatever.
That's okay.
I will say, and this is just a product of the time, you know, it's almost an hour long. I was getting listener fatigue near the end of this. I really was. Maybe that's why I was so critical. That Leave Me On is a bad song, but I do think I was maybe getting a little more critical near the end because it was so long, man. I mean, it's just a long album. I know that was a CD age. That's what they started doing at that time frame. But that said, Eric Clapton, he's one of the best at what he does, man. He, you know, those blues riffs that he kicks in are fantastic. He's really good at making a song, kind of a blues rock song, kind of commercial. And that's not a real easy thing to do, but he's kind of mastered that. Overall, my score is a 7.2, and I'm good with that. So I think it's right, just a shade above great there.
All right, Anthony, final thoughts on Journeyman?
Yeah, you know, when this album sails, it sails. When it cooks, it cooks. But when it sinks, it sinks. It's that kind of album, man. And I did enjoy listening to it. I'm glad Jimmy picked it because I don't listen to a lot of Clapton. There's a lot of artists that are just have never been in my wheelhouse, you know, that I'm glad we're getting into more on the podcast. So it kind of forces me to listen to them a little more, which is kind of fun. I could easily recommend this one. I absolutely could. I have no problems giving it a recommendation, even if the few songs did sink it. My final rating is a 7.6. It probably would have been a little bit higher if it wasn't for those couple clunkers.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, I agree.
And honestly, this might wind up in my top 5 at the end of the year, like at number 5. It might be there. Even with that low rating, it still might be because these songs, when these songs are hot, man, I can't get enough of them.
It's fire.
I just want to keep listening to them and listening to them and listening to them. You know, so yeah, I easily recommend this one if you want to listen to some Clapton and then I might dive into a couple of his other albums later on and see what those are like. But yeah. 7.6.
For sure. Excellent. All right, guys. So I believe we have a pick. Christopher.
And in this corner, weighing in at approximately 180 pounds, the Ace of Apex, the Italian Stallion, the Ballad Boy. It's Anthony with his Pick of the Week.
I you know, guys, I keep going back to the Metallica album, 598 Garage Days. Nice and short is the way to get Metallica back on the podcast. Maybe Chris could pull the, like, blend the two clips together of the remake, you know, the original song and the new song and their song. You know what I'm saying? Like, have, like, Metallica's play and then, like, kind of fade into the original version of it, something like that. It might be kind of fun to do. Or I could try and do it if you want me to. But
thanks for the added work, Anthony. I appreciate that.
That would give us a solid 10 songs out of a 5-song album.
10
so.
Songs?
It's not that big a deal to you. You know how to do that. It's easy for you to do. Oh my Anyways, God. The 598 Garage Days EP, I really enjoyed listening to it again recently, and it keeps running back into my head. We haven't done Metallica in a while, and Load, Reload are kind of our next ones beyond this, and those are really long albums, and this was a long album with Eric Clapton, so I'm like, let's give Chris a break. Do 598, so... So 598 Garage Days EP from Metallica. It's only 5 songs, short and simple. Probably still be an hour-long podcast, but still.
Yeah, we managed to get long-winded, don't we? Oh,
we do. Yeah. So let's do that one, and we either do that next weekend or the weekend after. What's so this one we could actually probably do next weekend because we don't need much.
Yeah, well, if y'all – well, God, let me see my schedule. Jesus Christ.
Of course, Jimmy's working the weekends. I don't want to speak for him.
While
so.
Jimmy's checking that, tell us what you got going on this week, Anthony.
Oh, yeah.
It's Songlines and Tan Lines podcast is going to dive into Fruitcakes 1 and Fruitcakes 2 over the next 2 weeks. Fruitcakes 1 is all the episodes I've done on the podcast already. Fruitcakes 2 will be all the other ones I haven't done yet. And then I'm going to replay our one particular Harbor episode a few weeks from that. So that's kind of where that's coming. Songlines and Tan Lines on YouTube. Just putting out videos when I can, so swing over and check that out, too. So. Kind of what I'm working on. Just trying to find a creative outlet, man.
Guys, I think I can do it next Saturday. I got a late shift, but I got a chiropractor appointment that morning. So I will see if I can. I'll call this week and see if I can get it pushed up by about a half an hour.
It's up to Chris got time too. It's an easy hour.
Jesus Christ, dude. Yeah. Me think. Yeah.
It's fine. I can handle.
Okay. Yeah.
We'll see for next weekend.
It's a 5-song album. You're right. Yeah. It should be easy, hopefully.
I just really enjoyed diving back into it. I hadn't listened to it in a long time, so it was like, it was a lot of fun to listen to. So,
boy, you talking about taking me right back to freaking 10th grade.
Jeez. Man, my cousin actually stole this out, this tape from me years ago. I had to find out who stole it. I don't know why he took it. He gave it back to me, but he took it. And I was like, where'd my tape go?
Dude, this was a limited, just so you know, this was limited production on CDs. They went rare for years. Like, at one point in time, the CD, if you had original pressing of the CD on eBay back in, like, I don't know, 2002, 2003, this thing was going for, like, $150, $200.
Wow.
It's my first Metallica album, actually, that I bought.
Was it?
Yeah, because it was the cheapest. I didn't have a lot of money on me, and it was reasonable, so.
Master of Puppets was my first cassette from them.
Master of Puppets was my first taste. When I bought it at Kmart. My mom bought it from me at Kmart. Never will forget it. Yeah. Never will forget it, guys. It's crazy.
Oh, my memory of Master Puppets is taking it on a charity walk or something that morning and listening to it on my Walkman, something like that. So we were doing something with the church or something like that. I can't remember. Listening to Master Puppets, of course. Church boy, I was. All right. I guess we're getting long. I guess I'll let Jimmy wrap it up.
Yeah, boy. All right, guys. For the Audible Ecstasy podcast, this is Jimmy.
This is Chris.
This is Anthony.
And this is it.